We're spoiling everything in God of War Ragnarok and making Game Awards predictions on episode 277 of the It's Obvious podcast. My name's Garrett Drake, joined online, as always, by Jacob Alka. How are you, Jacob?
Doing well. Doing really well. How are you?
I'm also doing well, Jacob. It's a lovely Sunday afternoon in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm thrilled to be back podcasting with you, talking about some great video games. Mm-hmm. What's going on in your world?
Lots of no-lifing. Wow. I'm going to be completely honest. That's what I've been doing all week.
You and many others.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good one this time around. Been really excited about it. But other than that, working a lot, working out when I can, and just trying to keep things organized in my life as best I can. How about you?
Pretty much the same, Jacob. Just working. So I these days, I have nothing to report on other than just living life. So that's about it for me.
Nice.
Anything just pressing in your life you feel like sharing? And we'll just go ahead and jump into what we've been playing recently.
Anything pressing in my life? I don't think so. Just trying to mentally.
Just no-lifing well.
Yeah, that's been my life for this week. Just trying to. This has like been the weirdest year because it doesn't really even feel like Christmas. Like I'm not gonna have any Christmas stuff set up anywhere. So, the main reason I'm not doing that is because I don't have anywhere to store it. So if I don't have Christmas stuff, then I don't have to store it, and then I don't have to worry about it. So, and I won't even be here for Christmas. So I'll be traveling, but it is gonna feel a little weird this month. But other than that, everything's just completely normal. But how about you go first? What have you been playing, man?
I've been playing many games, Jacob. I'm just going to rattle on through them really quick because I only have one I really feel like is necessary to talk about in depth. But I've been playing Warzone 2. Continue to get wins with Zach. We had a just poetic win last night. And I think our key to victory is just being very tactical, patient, and positioning is everything. It was a little bit in Warzone 1 as well, but Warzone 2, if you're not positioned well, you're basically doomed. And it's kind of out of your control sometimes. I mean, most matches, the circle obviously will go where it pleases and you have to kind of keep up with it. But if you land well and you maneuver the map well and do a really good job at the tail end of the match, you're pretty much always going to win if you play tactically. And our key to victory lately has been, of course, that final circle, if you've played Warzone 2, as you know, shifts all over the place. And the last tiny circle will just continuously move.
Yeah.
And we got fortunate last night. There was a house that we wound up in. And we intentionally collect a lot of claymores and trip mines and suppression mines to really booby trap these houses at the end. Because we end up in a small shack usually and post up in two separate corners. And we mark every door and window with like claymores and mines. So when a squad busts in, they just, if they don't instantly die from those things, we finish them off very quickly.
That sounds horrible.
And so they busted in last night in two separate squads. Our traps, heavily damaged one squad, we finished them off. And then another squad came in. We just gunned them down like normally. And we leave. And there's two extra guys just out in an open field that we had a final battle with.
Mm-hmm.
And that, not to mention, that whole match was just incredible. We had so many different firefights. That's what I like about Warzone 2 as well. It's just, I guess it's the way the map's laid out and a lot of scenarios play out where you'll have like straight up gunfights with people for sometimes minutes at a time, depending on your positioning. So it makes the matches just full of stories and you come out with all these great tales of victory and defeat from Warzone 2. So we've had a good time with that. In addition to that, I played a decent amount of Vampire Survivors. I get why people like it. It's not really a game for me, I should say. I get why people like it and why it's a good game, but what little I played, I thought it's pretty cool. I played a little bit of Signalis, I think that's how you say it. It's a survival horror game that's kind of hard to describe, but very original Resident Evil inspired, and really interesting art design. I don't know anything about the story so far, it's very much a mystery, but gameplay is pretty standard, survival horror, like I said, very Resident Evil inspired, but just very well done, paying homage to that franchise and a new kind of like spiritual successor idea of that has been cool. I've played a little bit of Somerville, which I'm not digging so far, I got to be honest, and it's one of the co-creators of Inside. I think Inside's phenomenal. I think he also was involved with Limbo back in the day. Limbo and Inside in particular are two excellent games to me. Love them both. So I was very excited about Somerville. The trailers look great, but it's not a continuous oneer like those other games. It's broken up into different sections, and it's more about foreground and background rather than going side to side. So some of the puzzles have been kind of confusing. I generally don't like puzzles to begin with. I mean, I enjoy them enough in games like Little Nightmares and Inside and Limbo, when they're designed very well and thoughtfully, and it really utilizes the physics in the game, make them very entertaining to me. But so far, this game has not really grabbed me quite like those other games have. I think the art design's beautiful. It's a very intriguing premise right at the start, but it has not grabbed me like those other games have. So I'm kind of lukewarm on Somerville at the moment. Also played about 3 or 4 hours of Warhammer 40K Darktide. Okay. Yeah, very solid. It does not run as poorly on PC as I was anticipating. It's certainly not perfect. I have occasional frame drops. I haven't had any crashes, thankfully. But as far as just shooting hordes of enemies with weapons and using melee all the same and the different classes and the character creator and a seeming decent depth to combat. Again, I've only played a few hours and I think I'm like level 3.5. I'm not even level 4 yet. So there's different parts of this hideout that you go to in between rounds and missions to upgrade your character with weapons and gear and cosmetics. There's a training ground you can go to. But I mean, I played a decent amount of Vermintide 2. I know there are many Warhammer games out there, different styles of games, but I really enjoyed Vermintide 2 for a while, and introducing ranged weapons and a variety of them that play very well with like sick animations and really great feedback fighting the enemies has been pretty dope. So I'll definitely play more of that after I complete the Callisto Protocol, which is what I really want to talk about, because I think it's a really interesting conundrum this game and studio found themselves in, because the game came out and many people were either lukewarm or pretty negative on it, which is was disappointing for me, because I was, as I've been saying for nearly 6 months now, it's been my most anticipated game of the year since it was revealed. And I'm actually having a great time with it overall. I definitely understand people's criticisms. I don't think they're invalid whatsoever, but I'm not as harsh on it as other people have been. And I think a benefit to me is that I went into it with a full knowledge of what reviewers had to say of what they struggled with to begin with, which was the melee dodge system that's present in the game, and also a couple of the simplistic nature of it. And apparently the final boss is very frustrating. Going into the game with all that knowledge, I have not had a single issue with combat whatsoever. I picked it up very quickly. And in fact, I actually really enjoy the combination of using your grip, anti-gravity, telekinesis glove, your weapons, ranged weapons, and of course your melee baton. And the dodge system makes combat very engaging. It definitely is a bare-bones, straightforward experience, which was what I was hoping for, but it's very evident to see where this game could have been much deeper in some areas. And I don't think it being deeper in these particular areas would make it a significantly better game, but it would certainly bring it to the present a bit more. I think where it struggles are the tropes that have been present for far too long, specifically in the PS4 generation, that are just still present here in this game. Are way too many tight corridors you got to shimmy through, way too many vents you got to crawl through. It's just an abundance of those areas that clearly they're just like loading the next area wherever you're going. It's just a trope now that's even in God of War, there's a lot of that as well. So there's too much of that. There's too many encounters with these like tentacle monsters with a head attached to them that will shoot out of an egg sac and grab onto you, and you just got to button mash to get out of it. That happens way too often. These little creepy crawly things will do the same animation every time, where they'll either pop out of a wall or a chest and suckle onto you, and you got to rip them off, and it's the same animation every time. So those repetitive aspects are definitely far too present, but the core of what's important to me in the game, what I was expecting, works very well. I think the combat's very fun. The art design is phenomenal. The level design, aside from the vent stuff and the shimmying, are all beautiful and well laid out and thoughtfully laid out. The atmosphere is excellent. The graphics are unbelievably beautiful, especially in just running 4K 30fps. It's crazy how good it looks, but even in the performance mode with the settings dipped down a bit, it still looks awesome. Runs very well on PS5. It's a drastically different story on PC presently. They're slowly fixing it, but PS5 was certainly the focus, because I've had one crash, but aside from that, the only technical issues I've had are minor frame drops in a couple of places. The DualSense features are sick. And the only other like relatively negative part of it is the story and characters are just very dry. There's just nothing really interesting about it. It's just a very straightforward, creepy sci-fi horror story with very bland characters. Doesn't take me out of it. It's very standard. It doesn't really ruin my fun, but I think about games like Dead Space as well and other survival horror games. It's rare for them to have like a really engaging story full of awesome characters. And I think that's even more present because everyone who reviewed this game, and even me playing it now, I just came off of God of War Ragnarok, where the game is its strongest aspect or its story and characters. So that night and day difference, even though they're extremely different gameplay experiences, having characters in the story like that held up against something like Callisto that's coming out right after it makes it even more present. I've been going through it and wondering why people have been so harsh in this game, which again, I don't think is invalidated. Some people have complained about things that I think are a little too harsh, notably the combat. But my prediction is that these review codes went out, which is, this is a rarity when this happens, I think 2 days or 3 days before the game embargo lifted. That's very rare. Sometimes, obviously, embargoes won't lift till the day of release, which usually isn't a good sign. It means like either the publisher or developer are not confident in their product and are just expecting bad reviews. So they're hoping to salvage as many sales as possible before those reviews go public and pre-orders and whatnot. But I think a lot of people had frustration with this because they didn't grasp it at first and they had the feeling of having to rush through this game and get it done for embargo, which they didn't technically have to do. But, you know, most people want to hit that embargo because they're guaranteed a lot more clicks when they hit the embargo.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people may have just been extremely frustrated and just had to rush through it in hopes of getting it done on time and couldn't really savor some of the more impressive aspects of it. Overall, not to get too deep, because I'll eventually do a full review after I finished it, there are very modern ideas and visual and technical aspects present, but it's still held back by a lot of tropey stuff we've seen a lot of. So overall, I'd say even without finishing it, I think I'm nearing the end. I'm probably a few hours away from the end. I would probably land at like a strong 7.5, maybe an 8 by the end. It depends on how I feel, but it seems like features they're adding later, like New Game Plus and a couple of other interesting things that are coming later on, if they were present day one, would make it a slightly higher score for me. I think it's just kind of caught in between generations in terms of just the gameplay experience, which it doesn't make it a bad game to me. It just makes it feel slightly dated, but overall, I've had a very good time with it. And even last night, I was just like itching to get back to it because I've had a lot of fun with it so far. So it is not exactly everything I was hoping it would be for the most part, but it's still a great time. And if you like survival horror, if you like the idea of that mix of combat balancing resources and your ranged weapons, and I didn't even mention the upgrade system is very simple as well, but also very satisfying. I like that I'm also, I said this on Discord, I like that I've always been rewarded for going off the beaten path and exploring. And many of the side areas are surprisingly lengthy. In addition to getting very valuable loot from exploring, you get a lot of really cool environmental storytelling from the Black Iron Prison you're trying to escape from. So yeah, it's pretty solid. If you like those types of games, I think it's definitely worth playing. And I wouldn't blame you if you wanted to wait for a sale, because even after those reviews, as much as I still wanted to play the game despite the negativity, that $70 price tag did hurt a little bit. I don't regret my purchase, though. I've had a great time with it, so I do recommend people play it if you have any interest in those games whatsoever. That's all I've been playing, Jacob.
Nice, man.
So what do you got on the docket? What have you been playing?
I've been playing three things, basically, since the last time we spoke. The first of which being I picked up Pokemon Scarlet for my travels up to Illinois for Thanksgiving. It's funny, we tried to record a podcast before Thanksgiving, and then it kind of just got corrupted, the audio files, so didn't actually end up coming out, but in that episode, I was kind of like just sort of low-key bashing Pokemon just because of all the performance issues it's been having and all the just glitches people are experiencing while playing the game, which is completely terrible and Game Freak, that shouldn't be happening. And I don't know if that's whether it's Game Freak's problem or if it's Nintendo's hardware problem. I don't know if it's both, but it's kind of indefensible. It's been weeks since the game has been out and there's still performance issues. Things are still popping in and out of the screen. Graphics are loading late. When you walk into areas, like it's really bad. Those are the negatives. Other than that, the game is really, really fun. It's basically just a big open world Pokemon, even more so than Pokemon Arceus was, because this is a traditional Pokemon game. It's not like Arceus where it's, you know, Arceus was just like a completely different style of Pokemon game. This is just, you know, you still have your 8 gym leaders. Basically, there's 3 different paths that you can go on during the game, and you can do them all at the same time. It's like 3 quests. Like the first quest is to go take out 8 gym leaders. The second one is to deal with Team Star, which is like the Team Rocket equivalent in this game. And there's basically around the map, there's like, I think there's 4 or 5 different bases that they have, and you have to go into their bases and infiltrate them and beat the boss, basically. So that's kind of cool. Then the third quest style thing is, there are these like titans, or they're like these ancient titan Pokemon that like control elements or something exist in the world, and you have to go and take care of them because they're causing a disturbance. And every time you take one of those out, they will give a power to your rideable Pokemon, which is the legendary in this game. The legendaries you can just ride as a motorcycle, which is pretty cool. Well, they're not really motorcycles, but they have like wheels on their necks, but they're just regular rideable Pokemon, but they look really cool. Obviously, I have the red one because I'm playing Scarlet, but the more that you beat those Titans, the more like that you unlock. Like the first one I beat, I got the ability to swim. The second one, I could sprint. The third one, I can glide. So it basically all of those abilities are replacing the HMs that you would traditionally get from gym leaders at the end of, you know, a gym for getting your badge. Getting more and more of those abilities, it's making it even more fun to explore the world. You can access areas that you couldn't previously. When you get over to those areas, there's higher Pokemon, there's rarer Pokemon, there's better items you can find. It's a nice little rewarding loop that you sort of get on once you, because I'm always someone that likes to explore every nook and cranny of a world. I'll, you know, if I see where I'm supposed to go over there at the gym or a town, and then I like look over to the side and I'm like, okay, there's a big open field over there. I'm going to go over there and check it out, look for items, find Pokemon that I haven't caught yet to fill out my Pokedex, just that sort of thing. I would say I've probably cleared about maybe half the map so far. I've been kind of taking a break from it this week ever since I've been back just because of I had to finish God of War and WoW Dragonflight came out. So I haven't had much time to get back to it, but I definitely will here over the holiday season, I imagine. Second game I've been playing, just finished up God of War Ragnarok the day that I got back from Illinois. That game is an absolute treat. We're going to really dive into it here at the end of the show. I loved that game a lot. I thought it was a very good game. It definitely had a couple problems, I think. But overall, I just think both the games as a complete package, it's a really, really good experience. And you're really doing yourself a disservice by not experiencing it. And I'll just leave it at that for now. Really enjoyed my time with it. And then what I've been doing literally every single day this week is playing World of Warcraft Dragonflight, the new expansion, the 10th expansion, actually. It's been 10 of them, which is insane. Basically, it's a new continent, new talent trees for all the classes. There's a new class, a new dragon race. There's dragon riding. So basically, at the beginning of the campaign, you get a dragon. And each zone, you get a new dragon. And they each have all their own customization. And you get a talent tree for all of them. That they all share the same talent tree. But the more you unlock their talent tree, the more fun it is to dragon ride. And like they made the zone, they have like the zone is absolutely massive. So they're literally made to ride your dragons around. Basically, there's so many just high peaks that you can get on. You can just glide and shoot up in the air. And like it just feels incredible. Like I really recommend watching a video if you haven't seen what the dragon riding's like in the game. But it's very akin to Guild Wars 2's flying. So a lot of people like meme and say, oh, they stole it from Guild Wars 2. And they probably did. They probably got the idea from them. But they did a really good job with it, and it's made traversing the world really fun. It's made like questing and, you know, going to kill rares and finding treasure within the world really, really exciting. And just exploring in general. Like I've spent a lot of time just, you know, flying around just because I wanted to, just because I wanted to have the experience of just flying, because you move so quickly. Like traditionally in like the old world, like you would fly at 360% speed, but with the new dragon riding mounts, you're flying at 870% speed, I think. So literally more than or about double. So like you're definitely moving really fast, and it feels really good. Just been doing a lot of that. I did like a round of mythic dungeons this week to get my character geared up. Just been doing basically everything I can to sort of be ready for when the M plus dungeons come out, the raid comes out, and the PvP season starts. And that won't be next week, it'll be the week after. Just been really enjoying it. It's been really fun. If you were thinking about coming back to WoW, now might be a really good time. But completely understand if you want to wait. A lot of people are still hesitant to really dive back into a Blizzard game right now just because of the state of the company. It's completely up to you. But just know that it's a lot of fun, and I'm really enjoying it. But that's all I've been playing, Garrett.
Excellent, Jacob. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Well, there's plenty of news stories out there, but we weren't really in the mood to cover them. They weren't too pertinent. So we're going to focus on Game Awards nominations, given they're coming in a few days, depending on when you're listening. You could be listening long after the Game Awards for all we know. But if you're listening before the Game Awards 2022, we're going to talk about just the nominations that are most interesting to us. Not every single one, but the big ones, of course, like Game of the Year, Best Game Direction, Music, so on and so forth. So, Jacob, let's take a look at the categories. And let's start with game of the year. I actually have, because we recorded, Jacob had mentioned briefly, we recorded an episode a couple of weeks ago, but our audio got corrupted. So we're doing this again. But having played a bit more of a couple of these games on this list, notably finishing God of War, my thoughts have been revised a little bit. So I look forward to hearing what you think. Well, we'll start with the big one. Game of the year, Jacob. On this list, we have A Plague Tale Requiem, Elden Ring, God of War Ragnarok, Horizon Forbidden West, Stray, and Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think's going to win God of War? And we have to almost take this from, well, of course, give our subjective thoughts, but we have to think of this, these awards in particular, as an objective thought because there's a very particular set of people voting on them. So what do you think out of this list will win God of War based on the experiences you've had and the ones that are on this list?
Which of these do I think will win God of War?
Well, win Game of the Year, excuse me.
I don't think it's going to be God of War. I think it's going to be Elden Ring.
I think the exact same thing.
It's not my personal game of the year, but I think that's what's going to win. I see more people talk about that.
Yeah, tell me why you think that. You think it just because of word of mouth, or are there very particular reasons as to why you think it will beat out God of War? Because I have very specific thoughts on those two in particular.
So I think that the problem with God of War is that it's very similar to the game that came before it, and people are going to take that into consideration when they are doing this voting. I think Elden Ring for a lot of people was just a monumental step for FromSoft, you know, games in general. I think the big open world, the exploration that you could have, the breath of the wildness of the game where you could just go any way you wanted and just sort of find your own adventure. I think people really like experiencing that in a game, and to have a Dark Souls combat system and difficulty on top of that, I think that just really made the game of a generation for a lot of people. Like, I think people really love Elden Ring, and I don't think, maybe not even in my own circle, I don't think I realize that enough. So that's sort of my reasoning.
It's gonna be hilarious if just Stray comes out of nowhere, like Xenoblade or something, and slaughters all of these.
I could see that world. I really could.
Yeah, I also think Elden Ring is going to win. And I also, if I were voting, I would also vote Elden Ring personally because, and we'll get into our thoughts on God of War obviously very soon, but I jumped back into Elden Ring right after finishing God of War and was just immediately reminded of just the magnificence of that world. The biggest thing for me, because I actually, the only game on this list I've actually finished this year is God of War, but I've played the vast majority of Elden Ring. Of course, there's like several tiny little mini bosses I could kill, but in regard to the main series of bosses, I only have two bosses left because I've like looked into it and know for a fact. So I'm very close to the end and have seen the final two boss battles. So I know I've basically seen the majority of what the game has to offer to know that between God of War, and God of War is obviously much more fresh in my mind, and Elden Ring, I've had the most fun playing Elden Ring this year out of those two games specifically. I even went back to Horizon Forbidden West for like the fourth time and tried to play it, and I couldn't get more than like 30 minutes, dude. I don't know what it is about that game that just does not click with me. I'm just not in the mood to tediously shoot off parts of robot bodies with like 40 different types of arrows and like crafting my arrows on the fly. It's all designed very well. It feels good to play, but it's just too tedious for my mood right now. I don't know why. I've definitely had the most fun playing Elden Ring. For me, my game of the year always comes down to gameplay first. And of course, an amazing story and characters is just a huge cherry on top of a great gameplay experience. Not to get too specific at the moment, but I think God of War is very beautifully and thoughtfully and lovingly designed. But it's not as much fun to play as Elden Ring is. As phenomenal as the story and characters are in the game, that's just a bonus to me on top of what matters to me more is a great gameplay experience. So, and I also have had to think, like, how will people vote on these awards? Because people probably voted right after finishing God of War. And this is going to sound like a weird thing to say, but I always have to like take a step back and like really think about things like this. If God of War did not have an incredible musical score that's very emotionally moving, it always sounds harsh to say this, but melody and music can be very manipulative in a good way. It will sway you emotionally. Like, imagine God of War if it didn't have Barrett McCreary's music and it just had like something very bland and not memorable. It like wouldn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. And also the story and characters can really emotionally move you in a way. And I'm not saying it would deceive anyone, but it could almost be a distraction from, for me personally, what matters more to me. Is it gameplay or story? And I love a good story and characters, but gameplay matters to me more. So that's when I had to take a step back and analyze God of War. Although the story is a very important aspect of it, if I'm just looking at gameplay, what did I have the most fun with? It was Elden Ring.
Okay.
And I'll talk about a little more about that why when we talk about God of War spoilers. But my personal game of the year, all the ones I've played, is Elden Ring. And I do think Elden Ring will beat God of War at the Game Awards. That's not to disrespect God of War. I do think God of War is mostly an excellent game. And like you said, it's absolutely worth experiencing, especially just as a total package. 2018 and Ragnarok are great. So any other thoughts on Game of the Year before we go jump to another category?
Nope.
All right, let's do Best Game Direction, Jacob. On this list, we have Elden Ring, God of War, Horizon Forbidden West, Immortality, which I have not heard anything about, and Stray.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to win Best Game Direction?
I think the winner of Best Game Direction will be whichever game didn't win Game of the Year.
Yeah. I think Elden Ring... When I think about direction, the main thing from Elden Ring's direction that blows my mind is not only just the scope of the world, but the depth and interconnectivity and how thoughtfully designed that world is. And what's even crazier about Elden Ring's world is the traversal itself, where not only do you have your what do you call that horse thing you ride around? I've already forgotten
the name of it, honestly.
But you can basically parkour your way through so many parts of the map and so many different areas where like leaping from thing to thing. It's like it's unbounded. It's like nothing stops you from traversing that world. There are, of course, set boundaries, but it's amazing how interconnected it is and how thoughtfully designed it is. And the ways in which you can traverse it is just next level.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I know very little about game design, so whoever contributed to designing that world is amazing. And of course, the director is overseeing everything, so he's heavily involved in that aspect as well. That's the most mind-blowing aspect of Elden Ring to me. But I think God of War will probably win Best Direction, just because you consider not only is it mostly very well designed from a gameplay perspective, but you think about the story and characters and how to just weave that story and the one-shot aspect of it and what it takes to pull something like that off. Is pretty remarkable what they've achieved at Santa Monica. So I think God of War will win Best Game Direction, but it's unfair to me to say for some of these, because Horizon Forbidden West, those that have finished it and are fans of it have a lot of praise for it. So I can't comment too much on Horizon in comparison, because that could be the sleeper hit that wins Best Game Direction. But out of the two I've played most, I think God of War will probably win Best Game Direction. What do you think?
Yeah, I was sort of memeing. I can really see it going either way between those two games. But personally, I think it's going to be Elden Ring. I think it might take both the awards, if I'm being honest. I just think it does more new things than Ragnarok does. It's not to take anything away from God of War, of course. I just think it's going to be Elden Ring. It just did something new and it did it so well, right?
Yeah, another thing about it, too, that I always overlook in From Software games is the multiple endings you can get. Mm-hmm. And depending on side quest and quest you finish and all those other aspects, you got to factor that in as well. Whereas God of War, although it's very, very well directed, has a set ending. There's like a secret ending you can get, and there's like other little side things you can do that kind of amplify it. But for the most part, like the ending is the ending. The story is the story. There's no like branching paths or anything like Elden Ring has. So that's another thing to consider for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's all I have to say on game direction.
Yeah, me too.
Best narrative. Plague Tale, Elden Ring, God of War, Horizon Forbidden West, Immortality. What do you think, Jacob?
I mean, I can't say easily because I haven't played majority of these games. That's the problem with going through this. I've only played two of these games. I think Ragnarok is way better than Elden Ring narratively. I don't even think it's close. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, it's one thing, because Elden Ring is, to me at least, is more vaguely plot-heavy than it is character-driven, whereas Ragnarok not only has a pretty solid plot as well, it's very heavily character-driven, which I think the best stories are character-driven, and it has just an amazing cast of characters that are all equally a lot of fun to watch and just great performances across the board, so I think Ragnarok's plot benefits from such a great cast of characters. And one of my gripes with Horizon is I think all the characters are just very boring. So that also didn't help my engagement with that game. I will finish that game at some point in my life. I'm just distracted by other things right now, but there will be a time potentially in between after finishing Callisto. I'm going to keep dabbling in Darktide as well, but I may jump into Horizon and play that up until like the Dead Space remake and Hogwarts and Resident Evil and all that comes out early next year. Those are my thoughts on narrative. What do you think? I've heard Plague Tale has great characters, but I haven't heard really anyone say anything about the story necessarily. I could be wrong about that, but I mostly hear people say the performances and characters are strong.
Yeah. I just want to say that I don't play Elden Ring for, I don't play any FromSoft game for narrative. I really don't. I do it for the challenge, the combat, the ability to just create new builds and, you know, play games in a unique way.
I like the environmental storytelling and the sort of vague nature of the lore.
Yeah, I like how it's vague, games. Though. Like, I like not knowing why the world is in this state, just experiencing it.
I'm sure, like, lore fans of FromSoft games would say that's, like, blasphemous for us to say, but I feel like there's, like, a sect of FromSoft fans that are all about the lore and narrative. Of course, in addition to gameplay, but most FromSoftware fans that I know are there for the gameplay more so than the narrative, so I would agree. Moving on, what else stands out to you, Jake? What do you want to talk about? Best art direction could be fun.
Yeah. Let's do the next two.
Elden Ring, God of War, Horizon, Scorn, Stray. All of those are beautiful games for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I also would go with Elden Ring on art design on this. I think Elden Ring is a stunning game. All the different areas of the map. Not to mention just that, even that just one underground place with the big purple starry sky. That's just one of many areas that are mind-blowing in that game.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is that many of those areas you're actually physically exploring. It isn't just, oh, look at it from a distance, it's pretty. Like, most of God of War's areas are pretty, but a lot of the best looking stuff is just out in the distance where you can't go. Mm-hmm. Like, the vistas are just kind of out there, but you can't explore them. And Horizon Forbidden West is similar to Elden Ring in that it is also an extremely gorgeous game, everything I've seen from it. So I could see people voting for Horizon as well, but I think Elden Ring is stunning. Every time I fire up Elden Ring, I take so many screenshots. So for me, it's Elden Ring.
I think it's very hard for, I think a lot of these games do look very good. You're right. But I think I'd personally give it to God of War. I think every realm is uniquely distinct. I think they all look terrible. It's not what I meant. They all look beautiful. Like, for example, Asgard. I think that place looks awesome. Like, you don't spend a whole lot of time there, but in the game. But God, I think it looks so good. And I'm playing it on the PS5, and I think the PS5 might even be more powerful than my PC at this point. So I played Elden Ring on my PC, but I think you could go either way with either one of the games, even Horizon too. I think Horizon has some, I think Horizon's a lot like God of War in many ways in its art direction.
It is. When I think about art direction too, this may not matter to everyone, but I guess they're including in this description, it says for outstanding creative and or technical achievement in artistic design and animation. When I think of FromSoft games, I'm not thinking about the animation too much. So God of War it depends on the people voting. If people are paying attention to that keyword animation, they may think of it differently, like between Horizon and God of War more so than Elden Ring. But when I think of art direction out of those three in particular on this list, Elden Ring stands out to me the most. It is hard to say what will win. I think all of those are deserving in their own right. Even Scorn and Stray are beautiful looking games. My personal pick is Elden Ring.
I'll go God of War.
Yeah, it looks like these top like five or six categories are the main ones we want to cover. Anyway, let's do best score in music.
Yep.
I already know what this is for me. It's easy win. What do you think
it's
going to be?
It's Metal Hellsinger, isn't it?
Metal Hellsinger does have some cool original music from great artists, but there's that. There's Ragnarok, Elden Ring, Plague Tale, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I think it's obviously God of War because the music is not only incredible from Bear McCreary, but it so heavily complements the narrative and characters, like characters with their own themes and the recurring themes and the evolution of themes from 2018 and the new music. Not to mention the collaboration they did with Hozier. So everything about that, the music drastically complements the game versus just kind of being there. And Elden Ring's music is, and FromSoft music in general is always incredible, but there aren't really any themes that are memorable to me. I just know it's very epic and orchestral. Whereas God of War, I can instantly think of melodies and themes that associate with certain characters and story beats. That's what sets movie scores and game soundtracks apart are soundtracks that complement everything else that's a part of the game versus just being good music for the sake of good music.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think Elden Ring just had so many great musical moments. Like every key event that happened in the game, I can almost picture like the orchestral like soundtrack that was going along with it. And like, you know, something like a realization would happen along Kratos and Atreus' journey. Like these like deep, you know, voices would come in and be like, oh, it'd be like really epic. It'd be like something about the giants or something. Yeah, I think God of War Ragnarok easily wins this category for me. But Elden Ring has some really epic boss music in a lot of the fights. I can't specifically remember which ones.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, you know it's epic, but it isn't memorable like Bear McCreary's music is.
Yeah. If it wasn't for God of War, I think Elden Ring would win.
That's another reason not to go on a huge tangent. I think we covered the Mick Gordon Bethesda story in our episode that got corrupted. We're not going to comment on it here, but that's why his music stands apart from the other guy that filled his position for the DLC. It's like, it's fine music in the DLC, but it's not really composed like a composer would compose it. Although they're both metal, Mick Gordon still composes music that is like how a composer would do it, that greatly enhances the gameplay experiences, which really sets apart the special composers from just like your average Joe. Not to disrespect anyone's talent, but it takes a very special type of talent to make music that enhances a story and characters so well, like God of War does.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty much the God of War Elden Ring show. Best audio design is... I'm glad they separate this, because I remember back in the day it was musical score and audio design, which are two drastically different things that do complement each other, but they are separate, which I'm glad. So in this category, we have Modern Warfare 2, which definitely deserves to be in there. It's phenomenal. Elden Ring, God of War, Gran Turismo 7, Horizon Forbidden West. This one's a toss-up for me, dude, because out of all the games I've played, again, great audio. Haven't played Gran Turismo, but I'm assuming it's just excellent car audio design. Horizon Forbidden West, you got to consider the world they're in, with like the robotics meets the tribes and how the robots sound and all the mechanical parts, is a very interesting soundscape. Call of Duty generally has always had good audio, but Modern Warfare 2019 and Modern Warfare 2 in particular are truly excellent. Elden Ring is pretty standard for me. There are interesting parts of the soundscape and the audio design, but nothing too crazy. God of War also has great audio, but there wasn't anything about it that really stood out to me.
I'd give it to Call of Duty.
Callisto Protocol's audio has been incredible and greatly enhances the visual aspect of the game. If that were on this list, I would toss in my vote for that probably, but I don't know, man. This is a toss-up for me. What do you think it'll be?
Modern Warfare.
I think it will be too. It really is great, but I think all those games on that list I played all have great audio, so it's hard to say.
Yeah. I just remember the audio in Call of Duty being it was helpful in many situations. So if you can make it not just good but also helpful, I think that deserves an award.
Definitely. Then again, I could see it being fresh in people's mind when the game first launched in beta, the footstep audio was too loud and much other things people were complaining about, but Today it's in a great place. All right, last big one, Jacob. Best performance in this category, we have Ashley Burch for Horizon Forbidden West, Charlotte McBurney for A Plague Tale Requiem, we have Christopher Judge for God of War Ragnarok, Immortality Manon Gage, who played Immortality in the game I still know nothing about, and Sonny, I always forget how to say his last name, Suljic for God of War Ragnarok. Who do you think's got it?
So Christopher Judge won 2018's best performance for God of War. Yeah. I'm not sure on this one. I'm more inclined to give it to Sonny Suljic this time, because Atreus has a big part in this game. He's arguably just as important of a character in the story as Kratos this time. Not that he wasn't in the first one, I guess. I just mean like he has much more of a role to play this time. I think they gave it to him.
So I have a couple of thoughts. In this list, I could see a lot of people voting for Charlotte McBurney, because so many people who played Plague Tale said one of the best parts of that game is her performance.
Mm-hmm.
And between Sonny and Christopher Judge, I think Christopher Judge would win, because I think about the emotional aspects of their performances, where Atreus isn't one note, but he's still kind of that angsty teen for most of the game. He definitely has some more emotional moments, but Christopher Judge and Ragnarok especially went plus ultra with his performance, because he has even more emotional depth than he did in the first game. Like, it's more subtle in 2018, but it's a bit more overt. Like, I think at the moment when we'll jump into just slight spoilers here before we get into the spoiler talk, but that moment where Atreus kind of does that callback in the story where he's like, "Don't be sorry, father, be better," and Christopher Judge gives him that smile. You think about the very end when Christopher Judge reacts to the mural he sees. Moments like that are much deeper than what he did in 2018. And those, in regard to Kratos and Atreus, Kratos stands out to me more from the main story. But something I'm kind of disappointed about is that there are amazing performances from many people in that game. And I'm thinking about Thor in particular. I'll have to look up the guy's name. The guy who plays Thor killed it, dude. I thought Thor was an incredible performance.
Yeah.
I mean, they even thought Odin was very interesting, which I'm excited to talk about. It's kind of a bummer these other really talented actors don't even get nominated. I mean, I know you can't have a gigantic list, but it's kind of disappointing that all these people give these really amazing performances that almost stole the show for me in some areas, aren't even nominated. It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
So, but I'm sure a lot of people recognize their performances. And Ashley Birch is very talented. She's great as Aloy. Aloy is a cool character, but I've not played enough of Forbidden West to really comment on her full performance. So I think Christopher Judge out of that list will probably win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Charlotte won as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because I don't know. I got to look into this Immortality game because it's been nominated in a lot of categories and I have not heard anything about it.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I haven't either. I'm going to be completely honest here. Any other things I want to do? Let's see.
Yeah, there, any other categories that stand out to you, Jacob?
You want to do best multiplayer?
Oh, man, best action game, best action adventure. That could be fun, too. I still don't see multiplayer. Am I blind?
Third row.
Oh, that's the fourth row for me.
What?
Yeah, I think it's because the orientation of my page to see you and my list at the same time is shaped differently. Best multiplayer. Modern Warfare 2, Multiverses, Overwatch 2, Splatoon 3, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge. What do you think, Jacob?
I have no clue.
I think Call of Duty's best multiplayer out of those. I've only played Overwatch 2 and Modern Warfare 2 on that list, but in Overwatch 2, I've had a ton of fun with that game playing it, but it's a very, in my experience, a slight evolution. Actually, in some ways, drastic evolution from Overwatch 1, but it isn't night and day different. And Call of Duty, I think about how excellent most multiplayer has been, but 2019 and Modern Warfare 2, not just how well designed it is, but the variety of multiplayer modes present in Modern Warfare 2 is something to consider because there's just a lot of different ways to experience that multiplayer.
Yeah, I think you give it to Call of Duty. I don't think it's close.
I think action and action adventure could be too, and best role playing that could be fun too. Let's do role playing since you play more of those than I do, but I play enough to say something. I can only comment on one of these actually. In this list, we have Elden Ring. Is it Live Alive? Live a Live? I don't know what that is. Square Enix game. Pokemon Legends Arceus. Triangle Strategy from Square Enix. And Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
So, best role-playing game. I mean, I think you have to give this to Elden Ring. The only other game I played on this list is Pokemon Arceus. And it is a very good game. It definitely has its faults. But it achieves what really no other Pokemon game did up until that time. And that was exploring a wide open world, going on just catching Pokemon that are just wandering around. Like, you don't have to walk around in grass to like have a random spawn appear. Like, you walk around, you see the sprites of Pokemon walking around. And that's what people have always wanted. So I think that game was monumental, obviously, in the creation of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. But also just, I just think it took a step further in what Pokemon really needs to be to, you know, make that next step and evolve as a franchise. So I really think it's going to be Elden Ring just because I think it's a better role-playing game in general. But because you can literally play, you can create a build for any kind of role you want to be in that game. Pokemon, you're kind of restricted to playing with Pokemon. So for that reason alone, I think Elden Ring is going to win this.
I was thinking the same thing as the depth of Elden Ring being a very much an action RPG, obviously, but like you said, the different builds is something to consider. But I always want to think about it this way too, the intention behind the design and how well that intention is executed. And if you think about the focus of Pokemon being what Pokemon is, if it does it extremely well, I still think it makes it as a nominee as valuable as something like Elden Ring, where the intention of Elden Ring was to have all this depth of character builds in this action RPG. If like the intention is executed with excellence, I think that's something to consider. Again, I think so many people love Elden Ring that it's easy to say in a lot of these categories it would win, but I can't say that objectively because I haven't played any of those other games. Any other thoughts on RPG?
No.
All right, I'd say last two from what I can see that are worth mentioning are action and action adventure. That's interesting that action and action adventure, I know those are technically two different things, but it can be slim. So we got in best action game, Bayonetta 3, Modern Warfare 2, Neon White, Sifu, and Shredder's Revenge. This one's tough, man. I could see either, I think more people, it sounded like, played Sifu than Bayonetta 3. But I think the two that I would suspect get the most votes are Bayonetta and Sifu. What do you think?
I don't know. I only played one of these games, so.
I wish there was a shooter category. I guess we didn't get that many shooters this year. Like, if we were to vote at the turn of the year for shooters this year, I'm thinking we have Dark Tide, we have Call of Duty, we have Metal Hellsinger. There was a few that came out this year
Overwatch
that are notable,
2.
But Overwatch 2. So if I had to guess, the ones getting the most votes are Sifu and Bayonetta. I'm going to go with Sifu, I think, will win.
Okay.
Okay, best action adventure. Plague Tale, Ragnarok, Forbidden West, Stray, and Tunic. This can be tough too, man. Like I said, people who have played all the way through Forbidden West have a lot of good things to say about it. Ragnarok's combat, for me, most, not all of the world traversal is really solid. The reason I couldn't get into the first Plague Tale is because I thought it was very boring to play. It was just too vanilla for me. There were some interesting ideas, you know, like the rats and the puzzle solving and stuff, but I thought the stealth and action was like pretty weak. And I haven't heard too many people praise the gameplay in Plague Tale in particular. So I think the two big ones are Ragnarok and Forbidden West. That's tough, man. That's really hard to say. I think Horizon could beat God of War in Best Action Adventure.
I think Horizon will probably win, but I think, or God of War, honestly, either one of those could win. But I think Stray could sleeper take this one. I think it's a unique perspective to play a game from a cat's point of view, and the way you can solve puzzles in that game is fun.
I think Stray deserves some kind of an award. I just don't know what it is. It deserves something. There's a lot of unique aspects about that game. I haven't played it, obviously, but I've heard a lot of good things from Preston. I think it'll win something it's categorized in, but I've never seen that game. When I've looked at it, it doesn't look like an action-adventure game to me. So I'm surprised it's actually in that category.
Did you watch or you
should
play
it? Play it?
No, I've watched videos of it, though. I'm going to play it. It's on my backlog.
Well, Jacob, are there any other categories you feel like are worth covering while we're here?
Nah, I think we've pretty much exhausted this list.
Sweet. Well, I'm excited for the awards. I'll actually be out of town during the show. I don't know if I'll get to watch it, but of course, keep up on Twitter. So I always look forward to the Game Awards. I know there are apparently a lot of cool, if not reveals, showcases at this Game Awards like there normally are. Jeff Keighley has also recently announced that the show will be a bit shorter, which I'm happy to hear. The less fluff in anything is better for me. Mm-hmm. I have a lot to say about fluff and Ragnarok, but it'll be a shorter show. And rumors are that Naughty Dog will show something. I'm hoping it's factions, like a little bit of gameplay or like a teaser of gameplay, because I know they said we'll see more next year, but they changed their logo on Twitter to like a snowy Naughty Dog logo or an icy Naughty Dog logo. I'm not sure exactly what that means. Maybe it's a new IP they're revealing. That'd also be great.
Or Last of Us 2 remake.
Yeah. Last of Us 2 PS5 in particular enhancements I'd be stoked about. Because I replayed it on PS5, but the PS4 version, and it was in 60 FPS, and it was still gorgeous and played phenomenally. But after playing part one looks even better than part two now with the remake. So I'd like to see something like that. I think it was definitely not true, but someone came up with the rumor that there'd be a sequel to Sekiro revealed at the Game Awards, but I don't know if there's any validity to that. I would love to see a tease of Spider-Man 2.
Ooh.
Just any like really heavy hitter console exclusive I'd like to see more of. Like even, I mean, obviously Xbox is taking forever to put out exclusive games, but
yeah.
Whether it's Redfall or it's Starfield, something from Xbox would be nice as well.
Love to see Dragon Age.
I keep forgetting they're working on Dragon Age and Mass Effect over there. And BioWare.
Or what's that other game from Microsoft? Fable?
Oh, yeah. That's a long time coming, man. I have zero faith in that so far.
Oh, well, we've had nothing to have faith in. So
exactly. So it's just whenever I think of Fable, man, Lionhead was the magic behind those games. It was a very particular team led, obviously, by Peter Molyneux, who is a controversial game director, but Lionhead was a very particular style that they applied to those games and made them wholly unique to that studio. So any other studio trying to mimic that is questionable to me. So it'll be interesting to see how Fable plays out. But of course, I'm always very optimistic. I just right now, I don't expect much. But Jacob, while we're here mentioning Naughty Dog, before we move on to our God of War spoiler talk, did you see the latest trailer for The Last of Us show?
No, I don't think
Man,
so.
Great trailer. You actually get a lot of Ellie in it. Ellie speaking, Ellie acting, and she actually looks like she embodies the character of Ellie, which is awesome.
That's
and,
good news.
The teases of set pieces and even some of the new lines of dialogue look awesome. All the sets look great. The visual effects look awesome. So I'm like at an all-time high for the show. I have a lot of confidence it's going to be great.
Nice. And so I'm happy to hear.
Before, all I'm hoping is that it isn't, and they've openly said this, it is not a beat-for-beat remake of the game, which I'm so happy to hear. I want the story to have surprises, and I also want there to be more nuance in Ellie and Joel's performances from Pedro and Bella Ramsey. So, which it looks like we're going to get that. So I'm very stoked for the show. I have a lot of high hopes for it, and I think it looks great.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I'm going to watch it.
So Jacob and I did spoil a couple of minor aspects of Ragnarok already, but if that didn't bother you, and if you've not finished Ragnarok just yet, and you'd rather hold off on our thoughts and the spoilers in the game, you can skip over this with the timestamps provided in the description of whatever service you're listening on, be it YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google, anything. The timestamps are in the description, and you can jump ahead to Ask IOG so you don't get spoiled. With that out of the way, Jacob, we have both played Ragnarok. I have not 100% completed it, but I have done a lot of the post-game stuff to have thoughts on that as well. But we will start with what I believe to be the strongest aspect of both games, honestly, is the narrative and the characters. For Ragnarok in particular, Jacob, how do you feel about the story that Santa Monica has closed out the Norse saga with these characters?
I think the story is very good. From the very beginning, when Kratos and Atreus set out on their journey, you know, they had a goal of, in the first game, getting to the highest peak. I don't know if it had a name, but the highest peak in the lands to throw their mother's ashes. So that whole journey was very satisfying. This, like, they accomplished that goal. They go back home. I mean, they have the realization that Atreus is Loki. This whole next game, they spend the whole game sort of learning what the prophecy is saying is going to happen, and then sort of witnessing that happen basically to the T. Maybe not exactly how they thought it would happen, but it does happen. Maybe some ways it doesn't. I'm having trouble remembering, but after the story was resolved, Kratos walks up a little hill and he sees another one of those little, whatever they're called, prophecies, and he just has a moment of I don't even know what I'm trying to say. He's just the game is it's very satisfying. Just going from point A all the way till the end of this game, and just sort of the joint journey that they go on. Basically, it's in this game you spend a lot more time traveling to different realms. I feel like you, Atreus and Kratos, spend a lot more time going on separate journeys and growing as two individuals, as opposed to just, you know, having a father-son relationship the whole game, which is, you know, it was nice seeing how they sort of handle things on their own. I mean, obviously Kratos could do it. He's been doing this for a long time, but sort of seeing like Atreus go out and have his own little mini adventures and have his whole relationship with Odin and form bonds with people in Asgard. Just the whole journey that both of them went on and sort of the narrative crafted around that was really well done, I think, in this game. Many great characters, many great places to go. What are your thoughts, Garrett?
I think God of War Ragnarok is one of those rare experiences where it's almost perfectly rides the line of what people want in a sequel, where there's a lot of familiarity, but there's also some surprises in there that not many people would expect that are pulled off very well, which is very hard to do. I think it both struggles and benefits from that, but I think it mostly benefits. I think, like we've kind of talked about in this podcast already, the cast of characters is very strong across the board. I wouldn't even say there's really any weak characters. There are some that are less interesting than others, but I think for the most part, everyone's really well written and performed. Mm-hmm. And I think Christopher Judge's arc is the most interesting, and it helps that he has his, like you mentioned, his tremendous past from the Greek saga. And I think his main arc, of course, his arc in the first game was, you know, actually being a father to Atreus rather than just mm-hmm. like his leader, you know, calling him boy, finally calls him son. So they're obviously much closer in this game. They don't really have a falling out in this game, but they have that classic angsty teenager runs away from home and like Kratos is struggling to like guide him.
The one time he calls him boy, he runs off.
Yeah. their arc of growing to fully trust each other and not hide anything whatsoever from each other by the end of the game is very well done and well paced. And I think the big arc for Kratos was, you know, his whole life he's been recognized as a monster. Even his big moment, bringing out the blades of chaos from the floorboards and that vision of Athena being like, you'll always be a monster. He's like, yeah, well, I'm your monster no longer. Mm-hmm. And that theme is explored throughout this game, because even when, and I love the opening of the game, again, very reminiscent of 2018, but even more interesting is Odin and Thor just show up to sit down and have a chat.
Yeah.
That's what I love about, we'll get into Odin. I think Odin is brilliantly written and performed, like so beyond anything I could have hoped for that kind of performance.
Yeah.
But you can tell that Odin does fear Kratos, even at the beginning. He knows, like, this guy has killed so many gods, like, I don't want to piss him off. So I'm going to, yes, I'm manipulating them, but I'm also trepidatious about it because Kratos can definitely kill me. I like that everyone still recognizes Kratos. Like, even Thor's taunting Kratos at the beginning. Thor technically kills Kratos at the beginning and revives him. Yeah. So he's like, oh, I have your blood oath or whatever. But he's taunting him the whole time, like, oh, you're the god killer. You're the monster. This is all you've got, blah, 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 blah. And then you think about later, and we'll get into this too, where Heimdall, in his dying breath, calls Kratos a monster. And Kratos knew, like, yes, I've done a monstrous thing again, but you gave me no choice. But I think his moment at the end, seeing that mural of the quote unquote true prophecy, was Kratos finally being recognized as a hero and a god worth praising, essentially, because his whole life he's been thought of as a monster.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes his journey in 2018 up until the end of Ragnarok so interesting, because he has all that baggage in his past and is learning to be loved by his wife. And you can even see in the visions he has, the dreams he has of his past with his wife, how he was even struggling to feel fully loved by her, and then being loved by his son and trying to raise his son in a loving way when he has all this baggage. So his arc of truly becoming like a genuinely loving, compassionate father to Atreus by the end, and also being liberated from being just seen as only a monster. Yes, he's very powerful. He can be monstrous, but he also is a hero. Yep. Is a really, really well written and performed journey for Kratos, which makes him, I think, the most interesting. And that's why I also think he'll win Best Performance at the Game Awards. Mm-hmm. So all that was very, very well done to me. It's hard because there's a lot of aspects of the story to break down. We obviously can't spend the whole day talking about it, but I think notable other performances that I thought were very good, that were my favorites. I thought Thor, it was very, very well done, but it isn't necessarily a performance you haven't seen before, where it's like kind of the washed up, drunken dad who's has his own daddy issues, and he's kind of like, that's kind of affecting his wife and child. And his arc is good because he kind of has that redemption at the end. He has a very sad death. Like, I was actually kind of bummed that we didn't get a little bit more Thor at the end. I was hoping Thor would actually fight alongside Kratos at the end. Would have been sick.
I was expecting that.
I do think his arc is very well done, but it's not necessarily anything you haven't seen before. But I thought Thor stole the show in every scene he was in. With the Battle of Kratos at the beginning was so badass, was sick. Especially all the dialogue really amplified that fight, because the taunting and the things he says to Kratos are just sick. So I think another great moment with Thor's the bar fight with Atreus. That's a great moment in the story.
Yeah.
Really love that.
I think another performance that was almost just as good as Kratos was Odin. I think Odin was phenomenal in this game.
Yeah, he was, dude. I just immediately was captivated by the vibe he gave when he first shows up.
Yeah. I did not expect Odin to be like this in this game at all. I thought he was going to be a lot more like Zeus from, you know, God of War 3.
That's what I meant by, like, surprising people in a good way, because I also was expecting to be all like, I'm Zeus, and, like, you've pissed me off, I'm going to kill you. Like, so much more nuanced and, like, grounded human nature.
Just more than
Odin.
Human. Everyone has personality. Yeah. Everyone's, you know, the thing about these two games, that everything just feels more just down to earth in this realm, as opposed to like the Greek one, which is great. It provides more of a storytelling devices, I think. Odin the thing I loved about Odin when Atreus first went there is Odin was the father that Kratos wasn't ready to be yet, or that he couldn't be yet. And I loved seeing how just Atreus was, I don't know if looking up to him is the right word, because he didn't trust him. He said that.
But that's what's cool about Odin, is that he's so manipulative, is that you almost can feel that he's tricking Atreus, but he's so good at it that it's almost convincing that, like, oh, this guy's just like the cool uncle, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. It almost seemed like he actually does care about Atreus. And maybe he did. Like, maybe he wanted someone like Atreus around him all the time. We'll never know because that relationship never developed and the story happened as it did. But Odin was very driven by his desire to figure out
what else was out there. His lust for knowledge that he's obsessed with. He's like, no matter what the cost.
It's very relatable to many people today in our world. You know, many people, that's what they live for. They live for the search of knowledge, the like a science or maybe like someone that explores space. They always want to know what's more out there.
Like knowledge or power, just like anything people strive for and just will stop at nothing to achieve it.
Yeah. And he said he lived like that was the sole reason for existing. That was what he wanted to discover more than anything.
Another thing I like about him is that it always comes down to writing first, but what I can't remember his name who plays him, but his performance is so impressive because while he's acting like the cool uncle to Atreus, I don't know if you felt this way. I still felt uneasy around Odin, which I think is brilliant in the performance because I could just, because you think about Odin, everyone calls him the Allfather. Everyone reveres this god. And like, you're assuming he's extremely powerful and can just break you in an instant. And that's why I was kind of fearful as Atreus. I'm like, I feel like, yes, he's acting like the cool uncle, but at the same time, I'm kind of nervous around him because I feel like at any moment he could just snap.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting. And a lot of that comes down to the way he delivers his lines and like his mannerisms, the way he moves around and stuff. You're not quite sure, which I think is great because you find out later, obviously, that he has been tricking everyone the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
So have you watched, we'll talk about a few other performances too, but have you watched any spoiler reviews with Eric Williams, the director? So he has a lot of really interesting stuff to say on Kind of Funny, on Podcast Beyond, on GameSpot. So he kind of says the same things in all of them, but in each interview, he adds in a few extra things. Have you done any of the post-game stuff yet?
No.
Like, have you found the real tier?
Nope.
Okay, I think that's one of the most interesting aspects of the post-game is you can find the actual tier who is alive, but is in prison in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And within this prison, there are all these cells full of dead bodies of like a dwarf, of an elf, and a few others.
I don't necessarily want this to be spoiled for me, by the way. So,
okay, well, it's an aspect of Odin's character. I mean, it isn't like a holy crap, this changes my whole perspective of the game. It's just kind of a cool nod to what Odin was doing.
Yeah,
because obviously the big reveal is that he was Tyr the whole time spying on you. But he was also several other characters throughout the story that are just subtle images of him. You just don't realize it's him.
Okay.
Like one notable one when you're riding into, I think it's Jotunheim where the dwarves are. Is it Svartalfsheim? I can never say it. But when you're first rolling into where the dwarves are in your boat, there's a bridge where there's a dwarf up on the bridge who spits over the edge when he sees you coming. That's Odin disguised at the beginning. So there's like moments throughout the game where he literally watches your whole journey from start to finish. And that's kind of cool to me is that Tyr, they said they almost make it blatantly obvious the whole time that's Odin because he calls Freya Frigg and the way he speaks, he always calls Atreus Loki and he's always kind of on Loki's side in every scenario.
Mm-hmm.
He's never there present for a battle and he always shows up after the battle's over and it's like, oh, sorry, like I just can't do this. I thought that was interesting because I didn't ever suspect it until right as Brock started to confront him. I was like, holy crap. I'm like, what is this?
And yeah, then they reveal. Even at that point, I didn't realize it was Odin.
On one hand, it's kind of gimmicky. It's kind of like a sixth sense type reveal. Like, oh, I see dead people. You've been dead the whole time. It isn't anything mind-blowing that like we haven't seen anything quite like that done before. But it was very well done because I did not suspect. We knew Odin was up to something, but I didn't expect it to be something quite like that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a fun reveal. And obviously very sad that Brock dies in the process.
Yeah, Brock was great. He was a great character.
Brock and Sindri both, especially Sindri, really killed it in this game.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because, I mean, they were good characters in 2018, but they have a lot more to do in Ragnarok.
Yeah, I like Sindri and Atreus' little adventures that they would go on.
Yeah, that's kind of an open-ended question at the end of Ragnarok. If you haven't done the post-game stuff, I'm assuming you haven't gone to Brock's funeral either?
Nope. I beat the game and then I turned it off.
Okay, because that's how you roll credits in the game. After the credits roll, you can still keep playing, but if you want the actual credits to roll, you have to go to Brock's funeral.
Okay.
And I won't spoil that for you, but the way that plays out with Sindri is kind of a big question mark afterward. You're like, oh, wow, okay. So that'll be interesting to talk about later on as well. Other characters worth talking about, I thought Freya was awesome. It wasn't a drastic change for her where one minute she's like, I'm going to kill Kratos, and then like 3 hours later she's like, actually, I want to kill Odin. But I thought the main quest with her, freeing her from her bonds, obviously helped a lot because they talk a lot during that mission. But also the side quest that you can do afterward where you can kill all of the marriage vow items or whatever also contributes to that character development. So her transition from hating Kratos to siding with him works for me.
Yeah. I didn't think she was the strongest character by any means, but I think her whole arc of going from hating Kratos and wanting to kill him to being able to somewhat forgive him and then put all her anger towards Odin, who's really responsible for everything, is, I thought it was a good arc.
Yeah. What is her brother's name again? I always forget his name. Who sacrifices himself?
Freyr?
Freyr, that's right. Yeah, I thought he was very charismatic. I thought he was a fun character. Not a whole lot of depth to him, but I thought he was very charismatic and fun to have around. Yeah. Are there any major characters we're forgetting? I think that's the most of the main cast. I know there's some others in
the
there.
The fake Tyr, I guess. But it was just Odin. I mean, we kind of talked about it.
I also, it's funny because Tyr was obviously Odin the whole time, but I also was like, really liked Tyr's performance.
I wasn't crazy about him, honestly. I just thought it was kind of disappointing.
Something about him, I just liked his peaceful vibe, even though it was Odin tricking everyone the whole time.
I don't know. I kind of wanted him to be, maybe not necessarily like a warmonger, but just more. I really thought he was going to like turn a page. And I mean, it was Odin the whole time, but I thought it was going to actually like help us in the end. But that never really happened.
I've heard once you find the real Tyr, you can meet up with him and talk to him about stuff. And apparently he has a lot of really interesting stuff to say, but I haven't hit that yet.
Yeah, I want to do that.
How'd you feel about, I think her name's Thrud, Thor's daughter. Is that her name, Thrud?
I think. Yeah, Thrud.
Yeah, I think. I thought she was a cool character, too.
I liked her a lot. She was good.
I really liked her relationship with Thor. I thought it was very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's also a really cool, I won't spoil this for you, there's a cool reveal of her in the post game as well.
Yeah, I thought she was a really good character. I thought she was probably the best character to come out of Asgard. In the end, I liked her more than Thor, honestly. Just the whole, like, how she was having to deal with her drunken dad all the time. And
overly protective mother.
Yeah.
It is interesting because, I mean, there are things you can miss. I mean, there's, like, side quests. I think you can do a side quest with Thrud. I can't remember. But her main quest, and also if you listen in on the conversations between her and her mom.
Yeah, you can, like, hear mind doors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can, when you first get to Asgard, I think you can walk around with her and sort of just hear some extra dialogue. So
that stuff's good. I like too that the game is obviously there's a lot of dramatic elements to it, but there's also a lot of levity with comedy and a really well done comedic moments that are totally fitting for the characters. I like the little squirrel character's name performed by that YouTuber who's really popular. I always forget his name, but. Really killed it with that character, and even just moments with Kratos where he's just so stoic when people are trying to be playful with him is always funny.
He's like,
Yeah, I didn't take too many notes, but I know there's a lot of great comedic moments in there that are a lot of fun. And I do think completing this game, and a lot of it has to do with it being mostly developed for PS4, but the one take camera is still very cool to me. It's still very well done. But I think the game, from a gameplay standpoint, suffers a little bit because of it, which I'll get into later. But I still think that was really well implemented. And when I think about 2018, all the way through the end of Ragnarok, it's sick that both games are just one big one-er from start to finish is cool. I'm trying to think of any other big story moments that are worth mentioning, because some of them tie into gameplay. I think we can probably jump to gameplay, because anything else I have to say about characters has mostly to do with gameplay.
Okay.
I will say this. Do you feel the ending was satisfying for the Norse saga?
I do. I don't necessarily know how I feel about Odin being trapped in a little ball.
Odin's dead.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Because Sindri smashed it.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I don't know why I forgot that. Yeah, I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was like the best ending ever. I like how Atreus is sort of just going off and trying to fulfill his purpose, you know. He's going to find the giants, right? That's what he's doing. I was kind of bummed that we really never got to see, is it called Jordanheim? Is that the only realm we never go to, really? Do we go there?
I'm not sure. Jotunheim?
Yeah, is where the giants are.
I don't think you go. Wait, is Wildwood technically in Jotunheim?
It might be.
We didn't even talk about, what's her name? Angerboda. How do you feel about Angerboda?
Angerboda, she's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think she, that whole chapter in the beginning is not great. I think it goes on way too long, but I think her as a character is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I think she has a very endearing performance. Like a really, like yeah. her and Atreus, I think are adorable in her acting, but I agree. I was going to talk about that during gameplays that her whole sequence in Wildwood goes on way too long.
Yeah.
And I was kind of annoyed too, because her whole thing with her grandma is, it's there for a reason, because it kind of introduces those balls and like trapping the souls and freeing the snake. So it's not purposeless, but it's like the arc with the grandma, like they just kind of ruin her house and they just like bail, and you never hear anything else about her crazy grandma. It's like a forgotten character arc, but yeah. I thought she was a fun presence, and it was cool that she shows up in the final battle. And mm-hmm. I was surprised she didn't go with Atreus on his journey, but maybe she'll show up in the future. In regard to the story they wrote, I do think it was a satisfying conclusion to the Norse saga, but at the same time, it didn't move me in the way a story like Last of Us 2 did, where it's much more controversial, it's much more bold, and because of that, it makes me think deeper and it sticks with me more.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings up a more nuanced conversation, whereas God of War is very conclusive, very straightforward, and you have not every answer that you'd want, which it leaves the door open for a few character progressions, but for the most part, a lot of your questions are answered. So by the end, you're like, okay, I finished it, I know what happened, that's it. Whereas something a little more open-ended and like thought-provoking, and I'm not just being exclusive to Last of Us Part 2, I'm just using that as one example, it just gives you more to kind of chew on at the end. Whereas this, it's like, man, very satisfied with that. That's all I really have to say. So, but I do think it was very well done and a very fitting sequel to Ragnarok in terms of story, or 2018 in terms of story.
Yeah.
So before we jump to gameplay, where would you like to see the franchise go if they continue with God of War, either immediately or they jump to a new IP and come back to this 10 years later? With these characters, where are they in the story? Where would you like to see them go from here?
I think the obvious answer is picking up with an older Atreus, an older Loki. Maybe having Kratos, maybe as just a mentor. Or I don't really know how you would handle Kratos. I haven't thought a lot about it. I think it would be weird just to have Atreus without Kratos with no explanation. But I don't know. I mean, I don't like Atreus nearly as much as I like Kratos. So that's the main problem.
Same.
I don't know if this game did enough to make me really like him that much, but I could see him growing into a character that maybe I like. But I don't really know where you go from here. Like, do you want to go to another mythology, or do you want to just leave the franchise alone and just move on? Because I think you could do that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in two places because I don't dislike Atreus. I just don't think he's as fun or as interesting as Kratos is. And I think you could arguably leave this franchise alone forever at this point. I think from a character perspective, Atreus and Kratos being the main focus, both of them end in a place that I think is very conclusive. You can easily just say Kratos goes on for the rest of his life exploring, finding the giants. Yes, you could tell more story there, but I think Kratos especially is more conclusive because he's that final moment where he realizes like, okay, not everyone sees me as a monster anymore. That feels like a completed arc to me from a narrative perspective. I think they could replicate the reveal of God of War like 10 years from now, 8 to 10 years from now. Like you think about the reveal at E3 when Kratos walks into his little shack in 2018, everyone loses their minds because you haven't seen Kratos in so long. They could replicate that with Atreus in the future, potentially, but yeah. That's not something I'm necessarily yearning for. And like I said, I think it's just a very satisfying, conclusive ending. But then again, you could say the same thing about Halo and other franchises that just go on and on and on and on. And this game has been obviously very successful for Sony. So it's hard because it's like the creative challenge of artistically speaking, we should end it here and just let it go and go on to something else. But mm-hmm. The business side of it suggests otherwise.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was satisfied with the ending. They could do more with Atreus, but I'm not dying to see that personally.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Because you don't want to do it bad and then tarnish the other two games.
Mm-hmm. I would even like to see gameplay evolve a third time. If they could evolve it even, like you think about the very wide camera perspective, frenetic action of the original trilogy, then you have the more over the shoulder, still like great melee combat, but a more, I don't know how to describe it very well, but a more narrative driven. I mean, you still want it to be a great story, but what could they do with gameplay if they were to make a third trilogy, not even trilogy, just like a third arc for these characters?
Yeah.
That'd be the big thing I'd want to see. But story-wise, I'm pretty happy with where it ends.
You too.
All right, Jacob, let's talk into or jump into gameplay. How do you feel about God of War Ragnarok's gameplay from just, of course, the moment to moment, the progression? What do you got for me?
I think the gameplay is phenomenal. I think it's, I mean, you can either make an argument for the gameplay or the story that is more strong or that is better in this game. And I think the narrative is just slightly better for me, but the gameplay is just so much fun. I love how you unlock abilities in the trees as you keep playing. And in those abilities, you unlock more combos, more ways to take care of enemies in different ways. And it makes using each unique weapon more thrilling each time you switch to them. I think the gameplay is just phenomenal. I think it's so good. It might be one of the best games I've ever played gameplay-wise. What do you think?
See, I'm actually not quite there with gameplay.
Interesting.
One thing, the main thing I do recognize, because I kind of mentioned this in my review that not many people have seen, so I'll reiterate it here, but there's clearly so much love poured into every single detail of the game. Of course, story, but even gameplay and world design, whereas you can just tell they just loved crafting this game. And I do think it is a great gameplay experience, but there are aspects of it that reduce my enjoyment of it. And the main keyword I've used in describing my thoughts in the gameplay is fluff. And what I mean by that is I got to a point where I was laughing at a lot of this game design because by the end, I would just predict what was going to happen in every realm I went to. This would be like the loop every time. You show up, you fight like 25 enemies, and you go down a little path and you find like, okay, there's where we got to go right there. But oh no, like there's a bridge broken or there's a gear messed up. So let's go on this side path and fight 50 more enemies to get like a little item or hit a button. And then we can come back to where we were and then progress. It's like so many things slow down the pace of the story. And for me, the best part about it was the story and character. So I would find myself in these lulls where I was just traversing these realms that are just also, unless you're in the big open exploratory areas, it's almost deceiving to me. Because, for example, in Svartalfsheim, the dwarven place, you see the big lake. A lot of cool stuff to do in that big lake. And it gives you the perception of like, wow, look at this big open area. But it's like these little chunks that are very strictly designed that when you arrive to them, it's like, this is the only path you can take in this area. Sure, there's a little nooks and crannies you can explore and like a couple of puzzles you can do. For the most part, like that chunk, you can only go in this little chunk and like this one path in the chunk to get your items, to solve your puzzle, to fight your enemies. And then you leave. It isn't like kinetic and like dynamic in a way. It's like just like little chunks that you can go into that are very strictly designed.
Well, it's designed that way. So you come back later and visit it and, you know, re-experience the realm again.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. But even when you go back to them, what I'm saying is that it's just I don't want to compare them because it doesn't matter at this moment. That's why Elden Ring to me is a better gameplay experience, because it's like just so freeing because Elden Ring is obviously an open world game. God of War is not, but God of War has open areas that just still, even when they're open, still feel very strict.
Okay.
That's why I didn't like exploring much in 2018 either. Like I had very little enjoyment from the exploratory part. And that's why.
That's probably my favorite part in 2018.
Yeah, because I I don't want to jump around too much, but there's just a lot of fluff in areas where there's stuff blocking your path that really slow down the pace of the story. And like all I was most interested in when I found myself being like audibly like, whoa, this is sick, or like I'm really enjoying this, or like laughing or being really engaged were those big story moments. And some of those were with gameplay. Like I think the most badass moment in the entire game is when Atreus and Kratos fight the two Valkyrie leaders right after you turn Surtur into Ragnarok and he falls down that pit and you fight those two Valkyries.
Yeah.
That whole fight is not only sick from a gameplay perspective, but the conclusion of that fight, I think, is the most badass moment of the game. So there are moments like that that really stand out to me. I'm like, that was awesome. But it's like the in-between that just like bored me after a while. And a lot of the puzzles were, again, very like thoughtfully designed. Like after completing them, there weren't too many where I was completely stumped, because obviously the characters will tell you how to solve it if you don't solve it in like 30 seconds. But there were so many of them to the point where I just kind of got annoyed by it. And it's just there was always something blocking you from progressing. And that's what I was mostly there for. It's just like I wanted a flow that felt like I was constantly moving forward versus just being stumped by something that was just kind of arbitrary and like didn't really contribute to the story or gameplay very much. It's like something that just stops you for the sake of stopping you to like just fight more people. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that the combat is very well designed. I think it's excellent. Like you mentioned, the skill trees and the ways you can customize your weapons, and you can kind of make a somewhat of a custom build for Kratos, how you approach these fights.
I mean, you unlock everything eventually, but
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can really hone in on, like, I want my Blades of Chaos to be like this style of intensity. Like, you can even make your fist like really poisonous or something if you fight with your fist. There's like a bunch of different ways to tweak combat. Mm-hmm. But even at the end of it, I still have never loved like the sponginess of a lot of the enemies. Like, you can upgrade your weapons where you like cut through a lot of people, but you still are like really hacking at a lot of these enemies just over and over and over again. So again, I recognize it's very good, but I just don't have that much fun with it for some reason. So the big thing for gameplay that hindered my enjoyment of the game was just the fluff in a lot of areas, whether it be a puzzle or just something silly that's blocked your path. One example, because it's late in the game, when you go to get the spear with Brock, it's like, oh yeah, we're going up the mountain to get the spear or to have the spear crafted. Oh, like the bridge is broken, so we got to go fix it. And again, the saving grace of those moments is that they aren't wasted, because you either get more character interactions to better understand someone. There's always something to find along the way, like an upgrade item or like something that'll benefit you. So it isn't wasted, but there was just too many moments like that that detracted my enjoyment from the moment-to-moment gameplay. But the big moments that mattered, especially a lot of the boss fights, really were well done to me. That really made it awesome. So I don't hate the gameplay. I just didn't enjoy it as much as I probably would have if the puzzles and some of the arbitrary fluff was reduced a good bit and it was more streamlined. I would have enjoyed it more personally. That's okay. Like my broad thoughts on gameplay.
I completely agree with you on the fluff of the menus and the gearing.
I didn't even mention that aspect. I think there are too many special items.
I didn't have any problem with how the game flowed or how the enemies felt to kill or the puzzles or the flow of like the narrative or anything like that. I thought it was all fantastic, in my opinion. I didn't really have any problems with that. I knew going into this game, like, that's what God of War is. I know that's how the first one was. Like, of course, there are some areas you can't get to. Like, and I get to look forward to going back to those later. That's part of the experience for me. But really, I want to get into the gearing and the menus. Like, that stuff was... I don't know why they put all this stuff into the gearing. It's just way too much.
Yeah, you got, like, runes and amulets and handles and different armor sets. And
then they gave Freya whole thing.
A skill tree, yeah.
I can understand why Atreus has a tree, but...
As Freya, so that was kind of annoying to me.
Atreus was fine. He had just a few things, but... But to have Freya do it too, like, why couldn't you just have like a skeleton copy? Like, why do we have to add her too? And then Kratos has all these different things. Like, it's just way too much. Like, just provide maybe a few sets of armor, make them like aesthetically change when you upgrade them. Like, it doesn't need to be this whole thing of like, I want to make a poison fist build. Like, I just feel like you could argue like, that makes it like a better game and it's more replayability, but like, it's just way too much to the point where I got convoluted and I wouldn't even remember to upgrade things, or I wouldn't remember to use something that I had equipped that was like really underpowered because I just didn't know that I had it for some reason. It's just stuff like that. There was so much going on sometimes that it confused me. I don't know if I'm alone in that. Or not.
No, you're not alone. I very much felt the same way. And I think it's dependent on the difficulty you played on. I actually turned it down to all the way to the easiest difficulty because I was not in the mood to be challenged. And there were still, even on the easy difficulty, some challenging moments. But I was not in the mood to be challenged because, again, I don't come to God of War for the gameplay as much as I do the story. And I said this before, like, I didn't replay 2018 because I didn't think it was that fun to play anyway. There were some great, great moments, like, overall a fun game, but not fun to where I was like, oh, I can't wait to replay that. That's why I never replayed 2018, and that's why I didn't love every moment of this. And I wanted to clarify, I wasn't referring to side opportunities to explore in areas that were blocked off. I'm talking about like main story moments where we're moving along on a main mission and it's like, that's where we're going, but like, here's like a dumb reason to like be just to extend the main mission for like no reason really.
I didn't really look at it like that.
And there's just a few main missions that felt just a little too long to me, and I just got bored by the end of them.
Yeah, I could see that.
But they're not all of them are wasted, like we said, because you're getting a lot of character work out of all those moments. But
yeah,
that's the thing for me is like, yes, for me, the strongest part of God of War is the story. But at the end of the day, I care more about the gameplay experience than I do the story. So that's why it was a little mixed for me. But again, not bad, just not my favorite gameplay experience overall.
I don't know. I still just want to be competitive against that point. Like, I just think that this is a broken world. Of course, things are going to not flow perfectly. Of course, the bridge is going to be knocked out. Like, maybe it happened a few too many times in some points, and it made levels extend longer. But I don't know. Like, I never really felt like that at any point during, like, the main narrative. Like, oh, here's this gear that's broken. I can't go down this path. I got to go, like, 15 feet over this way and figure this whole puzzle out, and then I can come back. Like, I never just got annoyed at that. I don't know. I guess we're just different in that way.
Yeah, to each their own. I know I'm not alone in that. I mean, I've heard people say the same thing you have, and I've heard other people say similar things that I'm saying. So it just depends on what appeals to you. But
yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, it's no different than how I felt about 2018. 2018, I had very similar feelings about. Mm-hmm. So.
Dude, 2018 was, like, I made it, I said it was my favorite game of all time. So, of course, I'm going to, if this game's the same game almost, I'm going to like this game too. And I'm going to defend it because I love it.
I think the boss fights were the most memorable. And there are a lot of really great just standard fights too. Again, the melee combat is very well designed, especially when you introduce the spear. I think the spear was sick.
Spear's
great idea too. I know we had predicted that we'd probably see another weapon. I thought the spear was very fitting for Kratos being a Spartan. And a really endearing moment too when he has Brock bless it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice little narrative arc right there.
And I like there was a very particular reason too with the battle with Heimdall. I want to talk about some of the boss battles because I don't think there's a single bad boss battle in the game. Both Thor fights were dope. I thought the fight with Heimdall was very interesting, and the way you had to fight him with the spear was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Both narratively and gameplay was cool. I thought the Garm fight was really awesome when you fight the big wolf. Yeah. I think it's adorable that Fenrir's soul gets put into it later.
Yeah, that was great.
And Odin was surprisingly about what I expected. I was expecting more phases with him where you either like bounce around the realms or like something crazier. It was kind of
like... You're like he transforms or something.
Yeah, it was a little more subdued than I was expecting, but still a pretty solid fight.
Yeah. I thought the Thor was cool. That was good.
The dragon fight is defending the tree from Freya.
Yeah.
The most badass moment to me by far was that Valkyrie fight with Atreus and Kratos. It was so sick. love that.
Cool. Maybe there's some cool fights in the post game. I haven't seen them yet.
Dude, another really epic moment from the story is when he is the God of War, but Kratos blows Gjallarhorn, and it's perfectly in sync with the melody of the music.
Mm-hmm.
And the horn is like a part of the melody.
Yep.
And that whole sequence where the realms open and he's like, prepare yourselves. And they just run into battle. And it's like all out war happening was so sick. I thought that whole sequence all the way through to the end was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And loved every aspect of that journey from getting to Asgard all the way through the final battle was sick.
I agree. Did you do any of the Muspelheim challenges?
I did not. Because again, I just like I recognize the combat's great, but I'm not loving it at every moment. So I'm like, nah. I'm good.
That was the only point that I got annoyed at the game. I was doing one of those challenges, but I didn't struggle with it for too long.
Yeah. How'd you feel about playing as Atreus?
I wasn't crazy about it.
I thought it was suitable. Like, I didn't love it, but I didn't think it was bad at all. I was never bored as Atreus, but I definitely had way more fun as Kratos.
I didn't like firing his arrows very much, but I liked using his abilities, and I liked his melee combat. I thought he had cool melee combos. That was fun. I don't know. It didn't feel necessarily great, in my opinion. But I completely understand if someone really likes it. It just didn't do it for me like Kratos does it. But Kratos is perfect. Like I think Kratos is just so fun to play compared to Atreus. It's not even close.
And you have three weapons. I know Atreus has he can turn into a bear, he can turn into a wolf, and he has different arrows, but he only has like two finisher animations. So those got old after a while.
Yeah.
But Kratos with all of his brutal finishers. And of course you have three weapons, technically four of the shield to play with.
Yeah.
Makes him a lot of fun.
Very true.
Yeah. Anything else from gameplay that really stands out to you? Because I feel like we've mostly covered it.
We've done like puzzles. We've done combat. We've done.
Oh, I know what I wanted to comment on. It's so obvious that they had to mask a lot of loading. I know they say like, oh, we have these areas we have to shimmy through or lift a rock and crawl under it to tell you like, oh, you're going the right way. Like, don't turn back. But it's so obvious because there's so many parts of the game that have that, that there has to be more happening behind the scenes to help you progress. It's a mixed thing for me because I love the one take camera in the game, but they obviously have to factor that into gameplay. So you can never really have a hard cut. There are a couple moments where they cheat it in a way where it's like, oh, Kratos goes to grab a knife and it transitions to Atreus grabbing something else in Asgard. Yeah. So they're like making transitions there. That works for me.
Yeah.
But it's the moments where you have to traverse the realms where it's like, all right, let's open the door and like walk to the next realm. Sometimes it's quicker than others, but they have to do that. One, because the game needs to load, which is fine. I'd rather have that than a loading screen, but they also have to maintain the one camera take.
Yeah.
So because of that, it can be a little monotonous and like, it doesn't hurt the game to me. It's just very apparent that this is definitely mostly a last-gen game with some, on PS5, runs perfectly, looks awesome. But from a just gameplay flow, like it suffers a bit from being a previous-gen game.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I didn't even mention. Kratos and Atreus both feel great to control. It's amazing how feathery and light Kratos feels for being such a bulky character.
Mm-hmm.
And that really complements the melee combat in the game. So beautifully designed in terms of the way it feels to play as well. And also the DualSense, dude, just I think my favorite thing about it was just throwing the axe and recalling it. Just yep. The charge you feel and the thump when you catch it.
It's just like that in the first game too.
Satisfying every time. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, the whole DualSense design with the game is phenomenal.
Yeah. And on top of all that, like we mentioned, like the music is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it works so well in tandem with the story and characters that it's a major contributor to my enjoyment of the game.
Yep. Yeah, I think the music's just like the combat and the narrative for me is just top tier. There are not many things that I can really criticize about this game, and that's why I love it so much.
I sound harsh in some of the things I'm saying, but I really do mostly love the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like if someone like gunned to my head, like you have to rate it, I would give it like an 8 out of 10 personally. Everything in it is very good, I think. There's just like my personal taste. Not everything works for me as well as some other aspects. But in terms of the whole package, I was very satisfied with it and did mostly love it.
Nice. Well, I'm satisfied with leaving off there.
I'm glad we could finally talk about it in detail.
It's been a long time coming.
It was. Yeah, not only just waiting for the game, but also just talking about it since it came out. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I'm glad we both really liked it, and I very much look forward to seeing what Santa Monica does next. I would like to see them try something else, because they obviously have tremendous talent at that studio, especially just the writing and directing of just story is a big thing, but just gameplay, what they could do with focusing purely on current generation with potentially a new IP or reviving an old IP. I know Eric Williams, the director, said he'd like to take a stab at Castlevania. That'd be kind of sick to see them do a new Castlevania game.
Be interesting to see Sony get those rights. We'll see. But I would love to see a new IP. I'm so tired of just remakes and, you know, continuations of stories we've already known for a long time. Like, I want new stuff. New stuff is always exciting. I know it's risky, but I want new.
Yeah, and that's why Callisto Protocol, although there are some familiar aspects from Dead Space, not entirely, but familiar aspects, and it isn't a perfect game, it's still a brand new IP that mostly succeeds in ways that I wanted it to. And for that, that's why I'm really excited about it, because you can see this is good. I think the inevitable sequel will be much better. But to have a new IP come out and people mostly support it, and it'd be, for me at least, mostly a lot of fun, is a good thing. So, like you said, I'd love to see anything new from Naughty Dog, from Guerrilla, from Santa Monica. I think it's time to step out a little bit and do something new. And I'm sure they're all well underway doing stuff that we're just completely unaware of. This is the part of the show where we answer your questions submitted through any of our social media at It's Obvious Gaming, the Ask IOG section of our Discord channel, or emailed to us at itsobviousgaming@gmail.com. And if you want your question read live on the show, always include the hashtag #AskIOG. First one comes from Turtle Shrugged. We did answer these once, obviously, in our Corrupted episode from a couple weeks ago, but it'll be interesting to see how we answer them differently today. And I don't totally remember what we said, so that helps. Turtle Shrugged says, "Howdy, fellas. Just picked up a PS5 yesterday, and I've only had time to mess around with Astro's Playroom for a bit before having to work an 18-hour shift. And I think we did say back then that 18 hours is pretty brutal." He says, "Anyways, The question is this: what are some other games that you have played that take advantage of everything the controller can do? I'm hoping it isn't a gimmicky thing that they have one game to really show it off and then other games just don't really utilize it all that much. Part two to that question would be, what kind of features and ideas in games do you think would be cool to see using the controller? Just like any cool ideas you can think of. Thanks for being awesome and keep up the good work. Hope you have a great day. Same to you, Turtle Shrug.
I didn't really have a good answer first time, but God of War. Both of them.
Mainly, most of the PS5 exclusives take full advantage of it. Mm-hmm. The more obvious ones, I think, are God of War. Dude, Callisto Protocol's DualSense features are incredible.
What do they do?
How good they feel. The feedback from hitting and dodging, very satisfying. It's just so meat. Everything about the game, a lot of people are kind of criticizing this, but I like how heavy your character feels. He feels very tanky. I've gotten so used to the combat that it doesn't bother me. I up my sensitivity a bit, so he feels great to play to me, but it's just very meaty and chunky feedback when you hit and dodge. All the weapon trigger pulls and the way they pulse through the haptics of the controller feel awesome. Not to mention when you're sprinting. A lot of people don't like this, but I like when you can feel footsteps of your character moving. So it doesn't do it while you're walking, but if you sprint, you have a subtle feedback of his feet pounding the ground. And it's weird to say, but when you're traversing the menus, it's almost like a sensual feeling in your hands, because the way that they do these subtle like ticks in the handles of you pressing inputs that are just very like tingly in a way that feel good. And also when doors open and close, you feel like this whooshing in your hands of them. It just feels very intense and meaty in Callisto. Not to mention that the 3D audio greatly complementing that. So I think the auditory feedback and surround sound mixed with what you're feeling in your hands is a huge visually and audibly engaging experience. I think Callisto is recently a great example of DualSense. Horizon also is excellent from what I've played. Not only just all the ways the different bows feel to pull and shoot arrows, the impact of robots hitting you, obviously. One of the cooler things that's kind of the kind of stuff you see in Astro's Playroom, which is like the true demo of the controller, is when she crouches in tall grass, you can feel it brushing against you. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting feeling in your hands. I think Last of Us Part 1 also does a great job of all the different trigger pulls, and the recoil feels different for each weapon. So that's a standout to me. So I'd say really any PS5 exclusive, and even a couple of third-party games, Call of Duty notably, take great advantage of it. Modern Warfare 2 with all the haptics and triggers on feels awesome, but I wouldn't recommend it from like playing competitively. If you're going to play campaign, I'd say use the haptics if you're on PS5, because it just feels awesome. But I found them distracting in multiplayer, but it is a very cool sensation on controller with a DualSense in Modern Warfare 2. Returnal's also very good. So again, any PS5 exclusive, recommend it.
I can't think of any others that really stood out to me. I haven't played a whole lot of games on my PS5, so it's hard for me. Those are really where we want to look for the controller features. Because those games are, I'm pretty sure they have to some degree. I'm sure that maybe they don't have to, but I think they're maybe encouraged, or they might have like, Sony might even have like a team that like goes in and like tries to work with the developers to, I mean, I don't know. I have no idea how it works. Like maybe they're just encouraged to do it and maybe they get more money. I don't know, from Sony. Who knows?
That's why I like the Astro's Playroom is not only just a really fun, surprisingly fun game to play. Not only just like a action platformer, but also as a PlayStation fan, but it is the ultimate showcase of everything that controller can do. So I think it's there for both players to enjoy and also developers to be like, oh, wow, like look at everything we can do. And you can get really creative with it. One minor thing about Demon's Souls that I thought was so sick that I loved is that whenever you ignite your sword in flames, you can feel the flames like trickling in your hands. When your weapon's on fire, it's so cool. As far as ideas for the part two of the question, I know we've talked a lot about Hogwarts Legacy, and I'm very interested in such a magical world, how you can make the controller feel as magical as possible. There are so many things you could do. One of them, notably for me, I think it'd be so cool if you do Lumos to light up your wand, and similar to Demon's Souls, it doesn't really crackle in your hand, but there's like a whirring feeling of like your wand is ignited. Mm-hmm. And you kind of feel like a very subtle whirring in one of your hands.
It'll like light up your controller.
Yeah, it's like whatever they can do to make it feel a certain way. Like think about you're always holding a wand in Harry Potter. So I like the idea of doing Wingardium Leviosa and having some sort of like floaty effect in the haptics that make it feel like
some
you're
sort of like
kind of like anti-gravity feeling.
Like it's pushing against you.
imagine charging up a spell like that. It's kind of like Kratos with the axe. You can feel like the haptics increasing the closer it gets to your hand. There's that really big thud when it hits your
pressure
hand.
Pressure is building within the wand.
Exactly. Like stuff like that would be cool. Imagine like stupefy feeling like a shotgun almost. Mm-hmm. Like when you fire it off, it's like a really thick and chunky like thud in the controller when it fires off. But you can kind of feel it charging up a little bit. Maybe Expecto Patronum feels like a tornado whirring in your hand when you like charge it up and shoot out your Patronus. Mm. So many cool things they could do that. Imagine how they could make the broomstick feel on PS5. What they could do there.
Could be cool.
Man, there's like so much you could do with Harry Potter. That, I have like highest hopes in terms of just upcoming games with the DualSense. Harry Potter is a big one for me. Yeah.
100%.
Any other ideas you have in your mind, Jacob, for the DualSense?
All right, no. I like that you mentioned Harry Potter, though. I hope they do some good stuff with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tortoise Shrugged, thanks for writing in, man. I hope you enjoy your PS5. And yeah, definitely check out any other PS5 exclusives that intrigue you. You're in for a good time with the DualSense. Lastly for today, Jacob, Waximus writes in and says, "Good morning, fellas. Hope you all are well on this fine Saturday. It's Sunday for us now, but I think when he wrote this in, it was obviously Saturday. I work in the IT field and 99% of my work is done from home. I often have a significant amount of downtime during the day, and I often occupy that time with gaming. If you must choose a top 3 to 5 games to play while working or listening to a podcast, what would those games be? I have heard you guys mention good podcast games in the past, and I'm curious what those rankings would be." I got a new one, Jacob, but after you.
Gear where you have to grind things or that you need to, like, just, like, gather resources and stuff. Like, so, like, a World of Warcraft, a Destiny 2, Diablo is great. What was that game you played, Garrett, on PS5? It was like the one where you had to go through levels, I think. And they got harder.
Oh, Returnal?
Yeah, Returnal. Maybe that could be good.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be games a good like podcast that game. There's like minor story stuff in there. It's mostly a strictly gameplay experience. It's kind of like playing a third-person action. What's that game they did for PS4? Can't remember the name of it, but it's great. It's the little jet game where you go in a circle. Retrogun or something, what's it called? Rezogun.
Oh, Rezogun.
I think it's Rezogun.
I forgot that existed.
So yeah, Returnal could potentially be a good podcast game. Recently, Preston said that Gotham Knights, if you can even bear playing that game, he said it was a great podcast game. For me, recently, I haven't played Darkside with friends yet. I can imagine I'd be a little more focused on whatever's happening in the world if I was playing with friends. But I've just been mindlessly shooting enemies playing that game, which is very enjoyable to me to just kind of turn my brain off and just kill hordes of enemies. I can see that being a pretty solid podcast game because there's a lot of grinding in the sense that you're doing missions to garner income and other rewards that you invest back into your character to progress further. That's kind of in a sense, sort of a grindy game that doesn't really require too much focus on narrative or character. So you could really throw on a good podcast and play that game as well.
I can't think of any more right now. You got any more?
I think although Vampire Survivors is a great soundtrack, I could see that also being a great podcast game.
Yeah, for sure.
From what I've played. I think you nailed it though. Any like grindy RPG where you're farming stuff or kind of doing like doing a strike in Destiny you've done 20 times, throw on a podcast for that.
Yeah. Let's leave it at that.
Well, Jacob, I love talking to you, man. I'm glad we could get together and do it again. I know it'd been a while, but thankfully our audio should seemingly work this time. Yeah. I'm pretty confident it will. And love talking about God of War and everything else we've been playing. So, and thank you to the two of you who wrote in and all of you tuning in. As always, we greatly appreciate the continued support. And we love doing this when we can. So thanks for listening.
100%, man. Thank you for having me. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you soon. Enjoy your games.
Yes, sir. Later.
Later.